The In Radio Podcast with Dom Chambers.
In Radio. Hello and welcome to the In Radio Podcast. With this particular edition of the programme, time to mark, celebrate and generally make a fuss of one of the big bastions in the audio and radio year, that is World Radio Day. This year, 2021, UNESCO have attached the themes to World Radio Day of evolution, innovation and connection. Now, the other day, I was standing under the stars having a little reflection of the magnitude of these themes and how I could weave them into the In Radio podcast, when an opportunity landed right in my lap, so to speak. And I found myself in a conversation exploring these themes. What had happened is a station manager from Fife in Scotland had approached me for an interview to contribute to his World Radio Day programme special on Saturday the 13th of February. He was particularly keen to get my views as the chair of the Community Media Association. More about them in a moment. So as the conversation got underway to prepare for his programme, I found myself really enjoying my conversation with Alex Ayres from Kilcuddy Community Radio. And perhaps a little cheekily, I asked him if I could transfer the whole conversation onto the In Radio podcast because I felt that some of the things we touched on may be of interest to the listener of this podcast. He said yes, so what we have here is a host becomes guest situation. So this podcast is largely one conversation. But before I hand over the reins to Alex, I wanted to find out a little bit more about the local radio station that he runs. Now, in spite of my frequent visits to Scotland, Fife is not a part I know well, and I'm not sure I've had much reason to dwell there, mainly because once I've cleared Edinburgh, I'm steaming my way up to the Highlands. But if I do manage to get north of the border this August, which I'm very much hoping to do, if restrictions are sufficiently eased, then I'll be so pleased to be there, I'm going to try and take things at a leisurely pace. Now, I've visited over 75 local radio stations in the UK operating under the community licence. And what's really fun, as I'm approaching them, is to tune into them on the radio and just get a little feeling of what they're all about before they welcome me into their studios. So this podcast is being recorded in lockdown, and it's a nice fantasy, isn't it, to be thinking of the road out of Edinburgh to the north of Scotland, turning right, tuning the radio, and something like this coming through the in-car entertainment system.
K107 FM.
It is Sea a Gaelic Phrase Day. Certainly not my area of expertise, so instead I'm going to be joined today by Kirsty Strachan, who's the Community Development Worker for Gaelic with Fife Council. Good afternoon.
Yes, Gemma.
Already I'm at a loss, so I'm hoping that wasn't something rude.
Yes, Gemma is how you say good afternoon in Gaelic. Super easy phrase. Yes, Gemma.
Feskerma. So,
well done.
Nailing it already.
Hi there, my name is Alec Ayres and I'm part of the team at K107 FM, Kirkcaldy Community Radio. So we've been around since 2014 and obviously over the last 12 months looking to change and do more in our local community, both with the pandemic and our local standing. So pleased to say that we've been working more with our local authority, the Scottish Government, in terms of getting certain messaging and information across. And like other community stations, it's been trying to increase our broadcasting and what we can do. But a lot of that has been with presenters being remote in home studios. So from our point of view, it's a lot of stuff which is being recorded in home studios and then sent in. So it's the strain on our programming team to get all that content and put it in. So it's a lot of hours on myriad clocks at the moment, I'm afraid, and doing all that kind of thing. But from our point of view, we service the Kirkcaldy area in Fife, so that's the town of Kirkcaldy with a population of 60,000, but then also neighbouring towns pick us up as well, and we're the only licensed community station in our region, in Fife at the moment.
K107 FM.
And just before we get stuck into the conversation, I'm bound to say that in considering the themes for this year's World Radio Day, how fantastic is it in the height of lockdown to be making this connection across the British Isles, from northeast Somerset in the southwest to the east of Scotland.
In Radio Conversations with Dom Chambers.
Now, joining us today here at K107 FM, I'm pleased to be joined by Dom Chambers. He's the chair of the Community Media Association. Hi there, Dom.
Hello, good to be with you.
Now, today being World Radio Day, we're looking at what we've done here at K107FM in Kirkcaldy, and we're looking at our evolution, our innovation, our connection as the three main themes. But to throw it to you, tell us a little bit about the Community Media Association and how the last 12 months have been for you as a whole, as an organisation.
Community Media Association has been around for very nearly 40 years, and it started out as the Community Radio Association, was really a kind of a lobbying organisation to get licensed community radio off the ground in the UK. And clearly, as a mission, that succeeded, and the CMA, which became the CMA, to sort of reflect wider shifts in what was happening in media in the late 1990s. So the CRA gave way to the CMA and was very involved in the creation of the legislation that led to the Broadcasting Act, I think it was 2003, which created community radio in its licensed format. And that's when the Access Pilots became the first licensees, and some of those, many of those, are still operating to a high level of community engagement these days. I don't think anybody at that stage, including the government, Tessa Jowell was the minister in charge of this and overseeing it, I don't think anybody could have imagined or even dreamt that one day there would be 300 plus licenses in the UK. And that is a fantastic achievement to the work of people who put this together in the first place, but also all those community stations up and down the land, all communities really, who have driven this forward as a significant platform to bring communities together in a locality. And since then, we've seen the emergence of many different forms of community radio. Most, frankly, and it sounds like your one is one of these, are serving an area of geographic location and population. There are, of course, those that serve specific constituencies, special interest groups. Those could be Islamic. Gaydio is an example of that as well. Or indeed Angel, who come out of Havant in Hampshire, who are very much broadcasting to the senior citizens. So I think the CMA has been driving this, and since its achievement is now supporting it. So the CMA speaks to the significant stakeholders in our sector. Those could be the BBC, the government, of course, the Radio Academy. And it represents the interests of our members and the wider sector, to be fair. With Ofcom, the regulator, DCMS is the principal government department we deal with because they invented us in a way, or at least facilitated the licensing of community radio. So we still talk to them. Under my chairship, I'm hoping we can work with DCMS to get through to other government departments as well. You know, the link point of government is the Cabinet Office. We need to be talking to the Cabinet Office. They have the links with OmniGov and the dissemination of public service announcements, and we need to get this on a more of a national footing. And I mean national in the sense of across the UK. And I think this has been a slow journey. It's been difficult without something very recognisable like Rajar to give a credible audience narrative. But you know, the mood is turning in our favour, and I think the CMA is driving that forward and representing its the best interest. And that's all about policy, and hopefully that evolves and emerges out of the needs of our members and the wider sector as it arises. And I spend quite a lot of my time, when we're allowed to, travelling around the country, visiting radio stations and finding out how they go about the business of community-orientated and grassroots local radio. But you know, as I'm having those conversations, I've learnt that one of the biggest values of the CMA to its members is only really discovered when you've got yourself into a spot of bother. As far as I'm aware, throughout the UK, there's only one person employed on a full-time basis to help community radio. And that is Bill, our operations manager at the CMA. So if you've never had to call Bill in the CMA office, then that's good times for you, because it means everything's going swimmingly. But inevitably things go wrong. Someone has a pop, Ofcom's got involved, there's been technical failure, the list is endless. And knowing that someone is on the end of the phone, who I can tell you will drop everything to help when something is wrong, is a huge value. And for my money, well worth the £60 a year just to have that reassurance. The thing about the CMA is it brings people together, you know? We look forward to, as I'm sure we all do for many reasons, to a time of physical gatherings again. And, you know, when I walk into those annual community media conferences that the CMA deliver, Yes, there's interesting workshops. There's all sorts of stuff happening from a stage point of view. But really, it's looking around the room, seeing people with their cups of tea or in the evening, their drinks in their hand, talking to people that they may either know very well or they know partially or they've never met before. And they're talking their points about how are we all dealing with this business of delivering community radio and community media. So I think the CMA has had its own challenges like so many other people in our sector, but I think it's emerging stronger. We've currently got an election to council. There's 6 seats available, and I think we're going to have a very refreshed look to deal with whatever the world looks like as 2021 matures.
Looking at that theme for World Radio Day and evolution, saying that the world changes, radio evolves, whilst we don't have listening figures, which is what you refer to, Rajar, which is something that BBC and commercial radio stations have, we do believe through online statistics, through social media, through listening apps, etc., that there has been a huge increase in people listening to us here at K107 and indeed across community radio. You touched on DCMS, that's the Department of Culture, Media and Sport. It was now coming up to nearly a year ago that we had support from our local MP, Neil Hanvey MP, where we were calling on DCMS and Ofcom to give more support to community radio stations, not just through the pandemic, but longer term, because we've got the likes of funding that goes to community radio, but it's been the same size of pot for a number of years. There's, as you said, now 300 odd stations. That evolution across the whole sector, do you think that government is paying attention? Do you think there is that potential for a stronger working relationship with government, seeing the value of what community radio can offer?
Yes, I think they are aware of it, and I think they're increasingly aware of it. How we turn that into a national strategy is the $64,000 question. You have to bear in mind, we're not France, and I'm going to put that comment into context. France, which I happen to adore on so many different levels, but it has a different attitude to these things. So, for instance, in France, there's a tariff which commercial radio stations pay, which goes to support community radio. They still need to find other revenue strands as well. But and that is typically French. I mean, France, if you look at it from a history point of view, is really all about state interventions, sort of national strategies coming out of Paris. In this country, we have more of a tradition of sort of helping people sort of facilitate their own progression. So apologies for my history lesson there. But I think it is relevant in the sense that I don't think we're going to ever have, irrespective of the flavour and colour of our government, I don't think we're going to have a strong interventionist trend and something like saying, actually, the social value to the UK of community radio is to the point where we're just going to, you know, give millions of pounds to it. And I think there are those who expect that to happen and want it to happen. And I'm afraid they are disappointed. And the reality of the state treasury comes into bearing here. But what I'm talking about more is the tradition and an ethos. Can the government help facilitate us more? I believe so. I'm leading discussions with DCMS about securing and increasing the Community Radio Fund, which, let's face it, is the only fund dedicated to what it is we do in community radio in the UK. I know that there are some sympathetic funding strands, like the community strand of the National Lottery, and I'm sure that there is some funding in Scotland and Wales and probably Northern Ireland as well, which may go towards supporting community radio. But there's only one dedicated fund. Now, in theory, that could disappear. You know, originally when it was created, it was only anticipated for, I think, a few years. And that's all 15 years ago now, you see. So these things tend to kind of get signed off every 5 years. And normally in line with parliaments, although we're now sort of fairly into the current parliament over a year. It needs to be secured for the next 5 years. It needs to be increased. And I think, you know, we went through austerity where this fund was reduced, but luckily it was so under the radar, they didn't really notice it, and it didn't go completely when a lot of other funding did in the George Osborne era. And now I think the mood is changed. So I'm hoping that we can increase it. My personal ambition for this is to get it to support 3-year business plans rather than one, because I think that will have a much greater impact on helping us sustain our sector. So no big handouts from government. However, I think subtly we can find ways of getting the government to support us. And irrespective of who is in Downing Street and which party is in power, I think each government wants to declare its support for community radio. And I think we've seen some very tangible outcomes around that, particularly in those Tessa Jowell New Labour years, which really got this going. I don't think the Tories are as unfriendly towards us as some people might like to state. I actually think we have a government that is more interested in the arts than it can possibly declare at the moment, because we're in a national crisis, and that's what's going to focus any government. I do think the Prime Minister has a declared interest in the arts, and I think we can talk about and emphasise to government the social value, the value to the fabric of community life, the impact on individuals who participate, on their well-being, on their employability prospects. But at the same time, I think we also sit in the arts sector. And I almost feel, as an art college student of the mid-1980s, which remembers the cuts by Sir Keith Joseph under the Thatcher government, I almost feel that there may be a revenge of history. Now, some would say that's highly optimistic, but let's see what's going to happen. We've got an awful lot of more troubled stuff to get through between now and what might be considered a better funding environment in a few years' time.
And for those with a history in community radio, looking at that community radio fund that you've touched on, there have been some big headlines about how it's supporting the sector, but over the last 12 months, it's almost been as an emergency relief fund. So, as you said, rather than funding one-year projects, it's almost a number of stations having to go and evidence the fact that they are struggling almost to sustain their service, to keep the lights on. So, as a result, you know, a pot of, say, £300,000 spread across 300 community stations clearly isn't going to help the whole sector. So do you think that model is going to be towards supporting smaller projects, being able to support more stations, or is it going to continue on that emergency relief basis that it has been for the last year?
I think it was the right thing to do, and the CMA asked for this to happen, to realign the Community Radio Fund for emergency support, because at that stage of the early arrival of the pandemic, you know, people were really looking at their revenue sources drying up, and we needed to keep people on air, and I think that the fund very much helped to achieve that. Will it go back to being that wider developmental support? Yes, I'm sure it will. I think the needs of this year, the year that we've had, will be slightly different. I'm sure it will revert to its former purposes. I mean, the CMA did lobby and ask for increased funding availability for the pot this year, and DCMS managed to identify an extra £200,000. If anyone has applied, well, the decision-making panel, I think, met a few days ago, so you should be hearing from that soon. That was specifically to how community radio is supporting loneliness and isolation and that kind of vulnerable end to the community. Now, that tells you something, that the government is aware of what we're doing, has identified additional funding to support that. So whether we'll see that more kind of tailored aspect of why we're asking for funding, rather than just saying community radio per se is a good thing, but actually we are helping the government meet very significant social challenges of our times. And we're all aware of the rise in the unemployment figures, the challenges for young people and other people to get training, to get paid work. And I believe that community radio has a very important part to play in this. So I think we're going to see the return of the youth training schemes. We're already seeing that. The relationship between further education colleges and community radio stations, many examples of which are around the country. These are very tangible outcomes, is what we're talking about here. So I'm not really with the people who just shouting to the government, hey, guys, give us more money because we're doing good things. What I'm much more interested in is saying, listen, you have an agenda, the government has an agenda on these specific things, and this is how we are helping us. So help us to support your agenda. That's my approach.
And one of the things that we've seen over the last 12 months, whilst we haven't received any direct funding from the Radio Community Fund here at K107FM, we have seen the Audio Content Fund being introduced to the sector, and that's some of the support you mentioned there from the government. Now, that applies to both commercial and community stations, but as a result, some of the content that we've brought in has been funded and produced elsewhere, but aired here across the Kirkcaldy area. So we're looking at things such as Caring for Carers. We've got the Connections radio drama series, which was all by a full cast of disabled writers and disabled performers. We've had The Adventures of Captain Bobo, which we've just put onto our Listen Again service in Gaelic, to identify that whilst there's only a small proportion of Gaelic speakers in our area, it's an area of the community that we've never been able to address before. And we've then also got involved in other wider campaigns with the Radio Centre, such as Mental Health Minute, 60 Second Support. Do you think, again, that's the future of community radio, is working closer with the Radio Centre and its commercial body, working with the BBC, working with other production companies to give these projects a voice across those 300 stations potentially?
Yes, the one missing from your list there is supporting Local Radio Day. So I hope that we'll see you guys supporting that at whatever shape it looks like, bound to be held back till October as we did last year. And the point of making that is that Local Radio Day is now organised by the Local Radio Alliance, which I started a few years ago. The word is in alliance. So yes, I think cross-sector collaboration. I am, in terms of my personal outlook, driven by collaboration, talking to people and sharing commonality of vision, you know? How are we using radio to support communities during the pandemic? This crosses sectors from the BBC through the commercial networks to what we're doing in community radio. So I'm absolutely convinced that, yes, we should be talking and working with the Radio Centre. I have been to see the Radio Centre. In fact, they've hosted meetings that I've chaired at the Radio Academy or the CMA. So there is a principle of collaboration there. That will vary in its strength depending on what the project is, but Mental Health Minute is non-controversial. It's a great thing that the Radio Centre do, and we should all support it. And I'm pleased to say the radio station that I'm part of in Somerset is a big driver, because however we view the pandemic and the national crisis, the mental health of the population is emerging as a very, very serious concern. So I'm pleased that local radio is part of that. You talk about the BBC. Interesting, because you see, in Scotland, there's a bit of a different challenge from in England. There's, I think, 39, it's either 39 and 41, depending on how you look at it, local radio stations, BBC local radio stations. And BBC Scotland, which is an enormous, great sort of glass edifice in Glasgow, which I've been to, but in a sense, it's sort of categorised as a local radio station. Whereas I live in Somerset, we've got BBC Radio Somerset, we've got BBC Radio Bristol. I'm driving a collaboration between the Community Media Association members and the BBC. And this goes back to when I was chair last time round in 2015, and I drafted and David Holsworth, who was running English local radio at the time, agreed to everything. He said, I'll agree to anything you want, Dom, and said not to top slice the license fee. So we didn't have that discussion at the time. In England, it's a lot easier because there's a lot of, you know, BBC local radio is what they call it. I call it BBC regionally local radio. We are providing the hyper-local. Now, there is the basis of a relationship, is there not? If we know about our communities, the BBC have a different funding structure and a different approach to professionalism with their on-air content. I think that's, you know, a fantastic relationship that is developing in many parts of the country. And I'm pleased to say that in Somerset, we're leading the way here. In fact, I'm hosting a meeting with all 9 community radio licenses and BBC Radio Somerset. We've been collaborating for the last 18 months. The challenge in Scotland is that BBC Scotland is covering a nation. It is a national radio station, not a local one. And so I think it's much harder on a purely practical basis for community radio licenses such as yourselves to develop a resource-based relationship with BBC Scotland. But in principle, I think there is a greater relationship to develop between BBC local and community radio. I think there's probably greater changes to the BBC coming than they're even aware of. I don't want to sound like Nostradamus here, but I do think that the landscape is changing very, very fast. And it's no great secret that this government is not overly favoursome of the BBC. So we shall see where that goes. Will there be opportunities for the community broadcasters in a shifting landscape? Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly, that is the case. And the CMA will be making sure that it's sitting at the top table of discussions.
Now, from our point of view, we were involved with Local Radio Day this year. Pleased to get support from our local MSP, David Torrance, our local MP, Neil Hanvey, both sending in messages of support, being very public with their support via social media, etc. as well. So fully believe in that. And yeah, we have looked on in envy in terms of some of the working relationships that are being forged down south with some community stations and the local BBC service, whereby looking at sharing news resources as one example of kind of working in partnership. But with it then, it's looking at the world of innovation for World Radio Day. We've seen us looking at various things to adapt. We've introduced a Listen Again service for the first time ever so that people can catch up on some of our specialist music programming, for example, if they've missed it. Whereas in the past, our only option was maybe to repeat a broadcast, or if you missed it, you missed out. In terms of innovation, what do you think has changed? Because let's go back to the 80s. We were told that video would kill the radio star. We've heard podcasting for years is doing it. Yet through the pandemic, looking at figures from Radio Centre, for example, radio listening is up. So what is kind of the next wave of innovation for radio, do you believe?
Well, first thing to say, you've touched on this, is radio has proved a remarkably resilient form of media. 2020 celebrated 100 years of radio here in the UK with Marconi and what was happening in Chelmsford. And everybody said it is inevitable that with the increase of television viewing in the 60s and 70s, radio will be dead. There was growth in radio audiences at that time as well. The point about radio, we all know, is it, and I don't want to sound like a lager advert, or maybe I do, I don't know. But it's getting to the parts that other media cannot reach. So for as long as we've got FM, and the car is the place, isn't it? You can drive a car and listen to the radio. You can't drive a car and read a book or watch television or see your catch up with the news on a digital platform. So I think what's happened within that resilience, though, is a lot of innovation and change has taken place. So we now talk about, we certainly talk about the Radio Academy being the audio and radio industry. The kind of the pick and mix disappeared. You know, our childhood memories of standing at the pick and mix in Woolworths has disappeared. But what's happened is we're in a pick and mix place for audio and radio. When I was a kid, I used to regret if I'd missed the Sunday evening chart show, or you know, I'd have to wait to Gary Davis on Tuesday lunchtime to catch up with it. All that's gone, you know. When I first travelled, I can't believe I'm going to tell you this, but anyway, I will. When I first travelled in 1990, I thought I would miss Steve Wright in the Afternoon so much, I took cassettes with me of Steve Wright in the Afternoon as I was driving around the southwest of America. And interestingly, I found them the other day, and I wonder, I'll check with Steve's team first, but I wonder if they shouldn't go up on YouTube, because actually it's just a tremendous insight into the world of national radio 30 years ago. And who remembers Gary's bit in the middle? Anyway.
Yeah, people kind of taping their favourite shows and taking them with you. There's still sites where people are uploading air checks from famous shows from years ago. So it definitely has that connection to people, doesn't it?
Absolutely. But where we are now, you see, is that we can listen to what we want when we want it. And that has led to the further drive of innovation to create audio that's purely designed for that purpose. And we're not just about re-listening to stuff on your radio station or the BBC. People are, you know, have long since put dedicated audio together, calling them podcasts. And there's a huge growth audience in that. And I think lockdown has emphasized the need of podcasts, of local radio, of tuning in to get those trusted local voices. I don't know about you, and this is no disparaging thoughts about the BBC, but I'm getting a bit hacked off with Sophie Raworth and team. Nothing to do with her. She's delightful, by the way. But it's that miserable blasted national news at 10 o'clock or 6 in the evening, whenever it is. And I want media, and I do need to, you know, catch up with what's happening nationally, and the BBC are great at doing that. I want to hear those voices. I want, in my case, I want to hear Somerset voices talking about Somerset stuff. And, you know, I know I'm traveling when I'm allowed to travel and I'm coming back home. I pass a sign which says Upton Scudamore. And I thought, I know I'm home then. And then Summer Valley FM crackles in. And then more often than not, the Wurzels appear on the radio airways. And I thought, oh, I'm home now. And I feel very comfortable. I'm back here. I love the UK. I love travelling around, but I also love coming home. So in terms of what's happened with the pandemic, yes, local radio and community radio especially, I'd say, has really... And BBC, I'm not going to forget them because I think they've done an amazing job. BBC local radio, community radio, have really stepped up to the mark. We're seeing greater collaboration between the BBC and community radio, lots of content sharing, and I think that will develop. So this is an innovative business industry. We are in a power drive of innovation, and I'm excited to where it is all going. But the one thing I'm absolutely certain of is that there will always be a need for locally generated audio content covering local information, event guides and entertainment and profiling third sector activity. There will always be a need for that. Now, whether our local radio stations will be purely podcasting in 10 years' time, I'm not sure, and I'm not going to make that prediction. How much small-scale DAB will impact what we do in the community broadcast sector? I'm not really going to make that prediction as well. How long will FM be around? We don't need to forecast any of that, but I do believe that in whatever platforms and what a shape and size it looks like, there will be a need for what we do going forward.
Yeah, you've touched on that innovation. We're seeing, you know, local radio stations up and down the country, community radio stations offering their studios to podcasters or podcasting, you know, shows that have been recorded as a podcast going out on the airwaves as a radio show. There's certainly that synergy between the two, but also innovation over the last 12 months from the whole community sector is how stations have been able to stay on air, obviously with different local restrictions in Scotland versus Wales versus England and Northern Ireland. We've seen some studios not be able to have anyone going in, others with strict cleaning regimes in between, and the benefit of having one, two, three studios. Even this interview, if this had been 12 months ago, Dom, I'd have been sat in a radio station, you'd have been sat in a radio station, driven through a desk, down a phone line, and now we're doing it via video messaging. What other innovation have you seen from stations across the country to actually stay on air? How have they been able to do so without accessing that bricks and mortar, that studio that they're used to dealing with?
Well, it's interesting because each station is going to have a different level of restriction. Yes, we're all guided by the government restrictions and how we can operate. But, you know, there are community radio stations operating in schools. If the schools are closed, you can't have that community station open. The station I'm involved with in Northeast Somerset is independent. You know, people can come and work here as safely as they can anywhere else. So I think there's been some real challenges. What's impressed me, just with an overview across the nation, is that the pandemic has caused a greater level of inclusion. In my view, and I'm sure you share this, community radio is all about low barriers to entry. Other sectors in the radio is higher barriers to entry, but we are at low barriers. Inclusive in our outlook, and the fact that so many community stations have found ways, and often low budget ways, of being inclusive of people who are vulnerable to the virus, should not be going out and about, even irrespective of the levels of restriction. At Summer Valley FM, we have, at one point, I think we had around 18 people contributing remotely. We helped them get a bit of equipment. Some of them already had it. And I can also endorse this because I'm the chair of the Audio and Radio Emergency Fund, which is through my role as a trustee of the Radio Academy. And we've given nearly £100,000 worth of grants away, not only to help people overcome the shock of redundancy or low wages because of the pandemic, because they're freelance, but also helping to build home broadcasting and home audio making, whether it's, you know, through software purchase or kit purchase. And there's been a lot of it going on. So I think challenges were presented because of COVID-19. Our sector and our industry have responded with innovation. And will we ever go back to the way we were before March 2020? No, not really. I think now that we've established that we can include people who can't physically come into a radio station, that's got to be a good thing. That's got to be a good thing for people who have anxiety about travel, for people who have physical disability, maybe visually impaired. There's all sorts of ways that this new landscape, thanks to the response of community radio to the challenges, will, I think, breed a more inclusive ethos going forward. And that's unbelievably satisfying to view.
And then the third and final sub-theme of World Radio Day, looking at connection. Now, normally, community radio, that's going to be the first thing you talk about, is their connection to the local community, what they're looking to do. I think you alluded to earlier in terms of providing support for third sector, what's on events, etc., etc. That's the bread and butter. But what else have you seen community stations across the country do with that connection, particularly in response to the pandemic?
Well, I think the broadcast response we've touched on in this conversation, and I think that's been amazing. To give an example, at Summer Valley FM, we went up pretty quickly after the announcement of lockdown in March 2020. We went up by 25 volunteer hours a week. We launched a breakfast show, which we'd never really had before in its 12-year history. We had lunchtime shows. We had a live drive-time show, which has been patchy in the past. And this is not an isolated example. So the broadcast offer has really, really upped its game because there's been more volunteers. There's been more interest in volunteering in any way as a response to the pandemic. But away from the broadcast offer, I think the central places of community radio stations in the community has also led to some tremendous innovations and projects which have connection at their heart. Danny Lawrence, my predecessor as the chair of the CMA, started a fantastic project, which I don't think he expected to go the distance that it has gone. And that was through a little bit of local funding sources such as Rotary and Lions. They managed to purchase some radios, FM and digital radios, and give it to people who were living on their own, maybe isolating for reasons of age. And that was a great idea. But wow, did it take off. You know what? The other day, Danny told me they've given away 12,000 radios across the UK. Now, isn't that a great example of responding to the needs of the pandemic? Let's look at Andover and the Love Andover brands, where I happen to know David Harbour very well, who started Love Andover. And David, who lives in a pub, the pub obviously had to close. And they turned the whole thing into a distribution point for emergency sort of food and medical relief going out into the community. And him and his wife were running this at the same time as running a community radio station. There are so many examples, and the fact that I'm not naming every one doesn't mean to say that we at the CMA are not aware of what's going on here. But using radio to achieve so much more than the satisfactory listening of favoured pop music is what we're seeing here. And there's nothing wrong with anybody who volunteers in community radio because they want to share their passion for music. That's the backbone of our sector. But the truth is, there's so much more going on at the moment. And radio connects with people, I think, in a way that other media doesn't do. But the fact that we are physically helping shore up the fabric of community life through what we're doing, and that can involve very physical projects. There's relationships with food banks. And at one point, we even had spare food here at the radio station because we actually live on we work on a public pathway. So, you know, people could safely come in and get it. In the end, of course, we wanted to support the food bank, so we just handed it over to them because that's what they do. There's so many projects one could think about and talk about of how community radio is connecting in all sorts of ways during the current circumstances.
I think from us here at K107FM, you know, those projects and kind of the issuing out of radios is one that, you know, we're really looking towards as maybe a potential project in the future. It's very admirable, but I think it ties down to some of the things we've already touched about in terms of the evolution, the innovation, the connection of radio. It's so simple. What we found in our local area, a lot of people instantly going to Zoom and to Skype and to Teams to look at education, to have Zoom quizzes, to keep in contact with relatives via FaceTime. And we found that there was a whole community to which
all of these words, Zoom, FaceTime, Skype, are alien, they're scary. So some of our programming reflected that in terms of, for the first time ever, just a simple 1 hour piece of programming on a Sunday morning at 11 o'clock as an alternative to being able to go to church. So a little piece of religious programming, which we'd never done before, and is now a very popular show that's been listened to, you know, across the area, and indeed we're seeing people listening to it again. Likewise, with sports being so severely affected, we've been able to forge a stronger relationship with our local football team, and there's now a Saturday sports show in the build-up to what is a traditional kickoff time, where we've been able to speak to people connected to the club, former players, current players, and whilst access to the training ground and to the club is on hold at the moment, we've been able to kind of get that piece of programming to connect to sports fans who don't have that connection to the club, that are used to being able to go their pilgrimage to Starks Park on a Saturday afternoon, haven't been able to do that. So even on a small, small scale, we've been able to see that connection here in Kirkcaldy as well.
That's fantastic to hear.
So with it then, World Radio Day, and looking at it, what do you think the next 12 months will hold? Obviously, we can't predict what's going to happen in terms of vaccines and pandemic and when we're able to meet up again. But what do you think the next 12 months of radio is going to look like in the UK?
My view of the pandemic is similar to Karl Marx's view of war, in the sense of war, he argued, was the locomotive of history, and it would just shunt things on a little bit faster than might otherwise have happened. I think this is the same has happened with COVID-19. So many aspects of what future society is, and therefore by implication, our sector, the seeds were already there before March 2020. Now we're seeing rapid developments in all sorts of areas, and I can only see that continuing in terms of what happens in radio. The need for local radio has been proven, and I can't see that disappearing overnight. There may have been a slight redressing of the balances from that first lockdown, which has been more significant in restricting movement than the current lockdown. So you'd expect local radio audiences to rise. However, the general trend will continue. I think there will be greater levels of investment in community radio because we've proved ourselves. I think we'd proved ourselves for many years, but we've really established ourselves in the national general public psyche. So I think there will be greater levels of investment in this. And I'm not necessarily talking at a national level. I think there's a whole new set of relationships between local authorities and community radio stations. So as yet, we haven't achieved a radio centre type national programme of funded PSAs. But I mean, right across the country, I don't know about you guys, but right across the country, these conversations, these relationships have developed with local authorities who are financing the playing out of important public health and safety information. I can't see any of this going backwards. I can't see somebody saying, a listener saying, oh, I'm going to go back to national radio because I don't need to listen to those trusted local voices now because I'm able to get in my car and drive to work in Bristol. So I think where we are now will continue for some time. The interest in independent audio, independent of radio, that is, will continue to rise. And I think we live in very, very exciting times. Overall, moving away from the sort of year from now thing, I think it's unlikely that the country can sustain as many local radio stations as it currently is. I think that's a sort of a business reflection. I think the longer term trends are that for communities that want an audio communication platform but can't quite muster the resource for a full radio station, I think we'll see more local radio podcasting going on, as led by Kerry Jones down in Shaftesbury. I think what he's doing is really, really interesting as an innovation. It's almost like the whole radio station's become a podcast. I think you had to have a couple of conversations with Ofcom to get them to agree that. But I think they also recognise innovation when it's staring them in the face. So I think radio stations will need to develop a podcast version for some of that, say, key community content. And that's not all about reaction to pandemic and national crisis. I would love to see a podcast develop of Summer Valley FM's work with local musicians and arts creativity. This is one of the most fantastic reasons for local radio and community radio. You live in a part of the world which just has awesome levels of creativity, music and otherwise. And I'm sure that's reflected in what you're doing now as a local broadcaster. I think going forward, we'll be needing to package these things up a little bit more into podcasts than we are. But my general hopes for what we do are very positive at a time of huge negativity. And this is a disaster what we're going through as a country and a globe, of course. But our little bit of it is doing what it can, and I think it's growing in strength. So from that, if we can take a positive out of the negative, that is it.
No, I think it's all positive, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying there in terms of the future. And I do think we are seeing people leaning towards making that content available, whether it be through podcast or listen again. And I think the value of community radio has been there. And I think that the strength of some local programming is so strong that it shouldn't just be something that goes to air once, and if you miss it, you miss out. It should be something that, if it's relevant to the local community, they can tap into it as much as they want. I think we've got to view it in terms of how we consume television now. I think gone are the days that you watch one episode of a drama and then you wait till next Sunday at 9 o'clock to get the next episode and find out who done it. You get the entire series there and then. There you go, binge, watch it at your pace, watch it as often as you like. That's how we're now demanding and devouring content. I do think that radio can deliver in a similar way. There you go. Here's a pile of content. Take it when you want and not tune in Tuesday at 12. It has to be when the listener wants to do it. So, no, really, really appreciate your time today. I hope you have a great World Radio Day, Dom. That was Dom Chambers, the chair of the Community Media Association. They're a non-profit-making organisation funded to support community radio, and they represent the sector to government, industry and regulatory bodies. Dom, thank you very much.
Well, can I just say that in terms of the ethos of World Radio Day, to have connected with yourselves, I'm based in the southwest of England, you're in the east of Scotland, I'm a frequent visitor to Scotland, and I speed past Fife, hopefully within the law, and next time I'm going to turn left and come in and see you guys. But to have connected on this way for World Radio Day, that's spot on to what it's all about, and I've really enjoyed this conversation.
There you go. So Fife Constabulary, if you're listening, that was Dom coming at a safe and legal speed. We'll let you know if he's in the area and we'll keep an eye out for that. So no, genuinely, more than welcome that once, you know, restrictions ease next time you're in Scotland, by all means, take that little turn off the M90 and come into Kirkcaldy and see us. And yeah, we'll introduce you to the Kirkcaldy area as well. Dom, thank you very much.
Thank you.
In Radio, conversations with Dom Chambers.
Great talking with Alex there, and many thanks to him for setting up that conversation and allowing me to use it here on the In Radio podcast and giving me an opportunity to share a variety of opinions, which I should say are my own and not necessarily reflective of any organisation that I'm associated with. And that is it for this In Radio World Radio Day special. A year into the pandemic, and I think we can safely say there has never been a greater need for that power, which is audio and radio. Times are necessitating fast evolution that is being driven by innovation. And of course, it's all about connection. Catch you next time.